Welcome to this week's edition of our Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast, brought to you by Loot Crate, the best surprise you know is coming. And really good to be with you all again this week. I am Hub Arkish, the editor and general manager at Pro Football Weekly, joined by Arthur Arkish, one of our senior editors and reporters covering the NFL, specializing in the NFC North. And of course, we both spend a little bit of time around the Chicago Bears being based here in town. And Arthur, it's been an interesting week. There is excitement building. As usual, the lows are too low and the highs are getting a little too high, but there's no question that at least on one side of the ball, this football team is really starting to come. And I don't know, as near as I can tell, I think that that arrow is going to continue to point up, because there's some talented young players here who are emerging and are going to get better and better each week.
Hub, I wish our listeners could see you today ducked out in these awesome purple and turquoise socks. Hub's got a fresh new haircut. He is looking really good on this Thursday morning as we get ready to preview the Saints and the Bears. And the lows are low. Sure, Mitch Trubisky completes four passes, but they win, and they stressed the Bears did it at Hallis Hall on Wednesday. I know you were there. The most important statistic for a quarterback is wins and losses, and frankly, I can't disagree with that, even if I do have some qualms with maybe the way the game was called in Carolina. We can't hide the fact that Eddie Jackson built them a 14-point lead in the first, just over a quarter, and from there it was preservation mode. So, look, the Bears have a chance to head into the bye with a three-game winning streak and at 500, and I don't think many of us predicted that here a couple months ago, so all things considered, mostly positives, right?
Yeah, it really is. I guess I need to add that the fresh haircut is because Arthur's mother accused his father of looking like he belonged under the bridge at Michigan Avenue, wrapped up in his blanket with a shopping cart.
I thought you were going to say she accused you of looking like me, but that's even worse. So.
Things got a little out of hand there, so and I'm sure as our listeners like to have fun with when we talk about me getting a haircut. Yeah, it's all on the sides, folks. There's nothing to worry about on top. But and really with the Chicago Bears, I don't want to say it's all on the sides. There's nothing to worry about on top. But the reality is that yes, it's exciting with this defense. It's exciting with some of these young players. The mood at Hallis Hall this week, I wouldn't say it was euphoric, but it certainly is upbeat. I noticed John Fox, I think, actually trying to keep things tamped down a little bit. Dow Loggins was refreshingly honest in his interview on Wednesday in pointing out some of the mistakes that Mitch Trubisky is continuing to make. Not because they're criticizing Trubisky, they're very happy with him, but you've got this groundswell of people who can't find anything wrong with the defense, so now they want to bitch about the way Trubisky is being used, and they want the wraps taken off. And I thought that both Fox and Loggins did a really nice job of explaining why that's a bad idea and why the way they're handling him they think is the right way to go, and that they're pleased with his progress, but they don't expect him to make progress if they put him in situations where he's likely to fail.
I know there was a lot of focus on one particular sack. I believe Trubisky took four for the second consecutive week, but one that moved them out of a makeable field goal range, and I believe it was a double move call for Trey McBride. Dowell, more so than being critical of Mitch, he was pretty critical of his receivers, both saying McBride ran a bad route, but then from there, Mitch needed to recognize that and move on to his check down, which was an open Zach Miller in the flat. So I think it'll create a good segue, though, because not only Trey McBride, but also Tanner Gentry, I believe, was called out for an illegal formation penalty by Dowell Loggins yesterday. I wasn't there. Hub was. I'm anxious to get up there Thursday. And I'd imagine the new focus, Hub, will be meeting the newest Bear, Dontrell Inman. That's kind of my segue, I guess, going from what the Bears have at receiver to what they're hoping they may have at least here in a few weeks.
Yeah, let me back up for just a second, though, because it was interesting. Mitch, when I talked to him, said that all four sacks were his fault. And obviously that's becoming part of this kid's MO. He's going to put everything on himself. He's trying to lead. I think he's off to a good start in that regard. As he becomes more productive, he'll find the line between blaming himself and what really matters. But it was interesting that one of the things they were very pleased with. And so I end up in this weird situation. I was a little laid up last week, had to do a game from home, which I don't like doing, and got a late start. And so I'm watching the game, and on their very first third down call, they try and throw that wheel route to Tariq Cohn, and Trubisky, badly overthrows him. And I'm tweeting, that's a horrible third down call, which it was, problem was I was about 8 minutes behind on the tape at the house, and they actually had just called the nice third down throw to Zach Miller on the next possession. Mm-hmm. But that's a different story for a different time. Dahl Loggins pointed out that that was actually a check down, an audible, and the correct check that Trubisky called, and that was one of the things that they're really thrilled with, is that he recognized it. He called the right check down. Unfortunately, they had the wrong personnel group in for it, so it was a coaching mistake that looked bad on the call, and the call wasn't the issue. And so, you know, one of the reasons, the main reason that Trubisky is being coddled, I don't want to say hemmed in, but held back the way he is because of his tremendous inexperience and the things that he has to learn. But the secondary reason, and the Bears don't dispute it, is he doesn't have the targets. He doesn't have the weapons to run an NFL offense right now, and they did try and do something about that. They traded a 7th-round draft choice to the Los Angeles Chargers for Dontrell Inman. The kid is 6'3", 205 pounds. He's had a bit of a hamstring issue and hasn't been playing much for the Chargers, and that's one of the reasons that he was available. Of course, they've also got Tyrell Williams and drafted Mike Williams this year, and so he became expendable. This kid proved last year that he is a legitimate at least number three and probably number two receiver in the NFL. He had 57 catches for 844 yards as the number two to Williams, who had over 1,000 yards. Now, that's a legit number two. He's got great size for the position. He's a former, was a 4th-round pick out of Virginia.
Undrafted.
Okay,
and bounced around a little
undrafted
bit.
Free agent out of
Virginia.
CFL. But did in fact have this big year. And what he is he's Cam Meredith on steroids.
Right.
Not
literally, folks.
But he is definitely more ready for the game. And so I heard one pundit midweek saying, well, you know, the only reason the Bears made the deal is because they won a couple games and now they're going for it. And they think they got it. That's ridiculous, okay? What they did was they thought they saw value. They don't see that they're going to, with the 7th-round pick, get a guy who's already as accomplished in the NFL as Inman is. The kid's 28 years old, so should be hitting his prime, should have at least 2-3 more good years. The issue is that he comes to town nursing that hamstring. The Chargers announced the deal on Wednesday. The Bears wouldn't announce it until Thursday because they wanted to give him his physical. They wanted to make sure. So he's going to pass the physical. He's going to be a Chicago Bear, but don't expect an instant impact out of him. Between learning the playbook and getting that hamstring cleared, fortunately they do have the bye after New Orleans. I'd be shocked if he was on the field against New Orleans, and you know, maybe he's healthy enough and has learned enough of the book to be ready the week after.
Yeah, and just to add a little bit to that, I would go as far as to say he's probably hard-pressed to dress on Sunday after likely arriving Thursday. The Bears have the bye after the game at the Superdome. So if he's up at all, again, expectations must be tempered. I think it's probably more likely that they're going to work to get him up for right after the bye. And just to add a little bit more context, he really would have been the number three, and Keenan Allen, of course, goes down early last season, I believe in week one with the ACL. And I can tell you that Philip Rivers' most trustworthy receiver was Dontrell Inman. It was Tyrell Williams who had the true breakout with the 1,000-yard season, but Inman wasn't far behind. I think he averaged like 15 yards a catch or something like that, and I've talked to people in the building. I know that they love the way that this guy works, much like Cam Meredith, the former undrafted guy who had to work for everything, improved each season with the Chargers, and like you said, he may have some untapped potential. The Chargers put a second-round restricted tender on him, but he fell down the pecking order, not only with a healthy Keenan Allen coming back, but of course Mike Williams, you mentioned Travis Benjamin too, healthier, and they spent a lot of money on him 2 years ago, so he was just kind of the odd man out of the equation. But I think he's going to be the number one by week whatever it is, 9 or 10 after the bye for these Bears, and it gives them an opportunity. You can look at it as a rental if you want, but I choose to look at it as a 28 year old who now they get in their own building. We know the Bears need wholesale changes at the wide receiver position in the offseason, so maybe this guy can be a part of the transformation. He's not going to be the central figure, but starts kind of early on how they're going to have to hit the reset button for Trubisky's most, you know, not most important spot, but his support, if you will.
The Bears made this deal for two reasons, Arthur, and reason number two is that if they get lucky, they'll get some real production out of him at some point in the second half of the season. But
right.
Reason number one is they saw really nice value for a 7th-round pick. You know, this is a guy we can argue till the cows come home about whether he would have been 2, 3, or 4 in San Diego, what he's going to be here. At the end of the day, his numbers last year were almost identical to Cam Meredith's, but the difference is that Cam Meredith was able to get those numbers because teams were taking away Alshon Jeffrey. In San Diego, he compiled those numbers even though teams weren't able to take away Terrell Williams. He had a 1,000-yard receiver in front of him, as opposed to Meredith last year being the Bears' number two receiver with those 800-plus yards. And so, I mean, body type, everything about him. He is a, the on steroids is obviously a bad reference to the NFL. He is a slightly older and more mature Cam Meredith is probably the way to put it.
And I just want to reiterate, guys, Philip Rivers is very likely going to the Hall of Fame. So when you endear yourself to him as a former undrafted guy who proves to be the most reliable, the most durable, missed the least amount of snaps, that's saying something. And I do just want to take one moment, because listeners may or may not know, I mostly write about fantasy football in addition to covering the Bears at Pro Football Weekly. I have been giving losing advice for the most part, 90% of the time, I'm sure, for 8 weeks. So I had to take a moment just to pat myself on the back. Guys, I called this trade August 31st. I said Ryan Pace should pick up the phone and reach out to Tom Telesco to go get Dontrell Inman. So I had some fun with that on Twitter yesterday. I retweeted my original tweet. And again, guys, it was the greatest of dart throws. But since I've been so humbled by my poor fantasy advice, I had to take just a moment to point that out yesterday.
Yeah, and it would be really nice if every one of you who is listening to the podcast would email him at aarkish@profootballweekly.com to congratulate him so I can stop hearing about this, because the tweet is there. It absolutely is. Arthur called this trade exactly what it was on August 31st, so hats off to him.
If only I could guess some winning lottery numbers. There's a lot of other areas I'd prefer to be right, but we'll take it. So.
All right, so interesting trade, good move. Mm-hmm. Bears get ready for New Orleans. No matter what happens here, they're going to head into the bye with some momentum. And so you look at where this football team is at. And Arthur, before we get into more of the X's and O's and talking about some of the personnel moves and other things that have to happen, there's something that I've been focused on the last 2 or 3 weeks. And you know, obviously we're not going to hear about it. The Bears aren't going to talk about it publicly or announce it. But I sure hope they are working behind the scenes to get Kyle Fuller re-signed. You know, they have shown a willingness to do this. They spent bad money, in my opinion, on Charles Leno. They spent good money on Akeem Hicks. They still have enough cap room left this year to do one more deal like this. And whatever happened in the first 3 years with Kyle Fuller, and I don't fault the Bears for it. I have no idea what was going on last year, because I've had both my knees scoped, and I don't know what Kyle Fuller's scope was about, but to miss an entire football season for it, that just doesn't happen, you know. And during that time, you had Vic Fangio taking the occasional pot shot at him, suggesting that he might be a little bit soft. Now, maybe that was the motivation. Maybe that's what lit this kid's fire. But A, Kyle Fuller is as sound and solid a guy in that locker room as you could possibly find. He comes from a great family. He's a really good guy who wants this badly. And suddenly we're seeing that. He's demonstrating that. I mean, when he popped up in Cam Newton's face last Sunday, I'm thinking to myself, what the hell are you doing? You know, and he backed it up. And then Akeem Hicks talked on in the locker room after the game and again on Monday about what that meant to the team. And it's not just that he is playing literally locked down cover corner. He is playing as physical as any cornerback I can remember in a long time. He is on his way to the Pro Bowl, folks, and the Bears, probably rightly so, you know, elected not to exercise the fifth-year option on his rookie deal. The problem is that Stephon Gilmore just got $42 million guaranteed and never had
and
half a season.
And he's been stinking, we should add.
Well,
he has not played well.
Maybe the reason he never had half a season,
yep,
to the level that Kyle Fuller is playing at right now. So, you know, I suppose there could be the doubts in the back of Ryan Pace's mind. We've had him 3.5 years. We've only seen this 7 weeks. But I'll tell you, I think it's going to be a mistake if they let this kid get to free agency.
We've seen the other big deals too in recent years. Janoris Jenkins cashes in. Other examples are actually kind of escaping me. Drake Kirkpatrick got a bunch of money in Cincinnati, so we know about what it's likely going to take to get Fuller done. I agree wholeheartedly on his play. I loved watching the smack talk, if you will, up in Cam's face. That's more than Kyle Fuller has said to us in the locker room for 4 years, so that was pretty stunning to see. Clearly, he is a confident guy right now. I'm always an advocate for if you're sold on a player, you get to him early, and there's some potential savings before he hits the free market. But I do wonder if potentially them, and I think it was the right move too, but the fact that they declined that option, if maybe now Kyle's feeling like he wants to go, you know, they've given him the ability to go have 31 other teams also decide what his market value is.
You know, the he is, I've had a few one-on-ones with him. He actually has done a little charity work with a group that I'm very involved with, the Midtown Education Foundation. And a little known fact about Kyle Fuller is he is a golf addict. And given the chance to come out to the MEF golf outing the last couple of years, he's been out there because he wanted to play, as well as, you know, devoting his time to the cause. And we had a long talk about a year ago, and he's really a class kid, and he really wants to do well, but he's quiet. He is soft-spoken. And something has come out in him, and it's not just the histrionics with Newton on the field. Hicks talked about it. Akeem Hicks said on Monday, the look in his eyes is enough to light up a defense. He is playing with a fire. He said, I've never seen a guy's eyes so wide open. So, you know, whatever it is, it would be understandable, you know. And I think every NFL player should get every penny they absolutely can.
No doubt.
And I wouldn't fault Fuller at all. I'm not saying the Bears can get a deal done, but they got to try. If they're not working on one, because I think it's come through pretty clear in my writing and my radio and TV work, Arthur, and here on this podcast, I continue to be a Ryan Pace fan. I've said it pretty much from day one. He isn't perfect. I like more than I don't like. There's some really interesting things happening here right now. But to me, the decision to give that guaranteed money to Charles Leno and not turn around and not try and do it with Kyle Fuller would be a huge mistake.
Yeah, and we love Kyle Long, and he can't control the injuries, but unfortunately right now getting to him early doesn't look like the best move. Again, I'm not saying it's Kyle's fault. He had the shoulder when he signed the deal, and then he has the gruesome ankle injury. He's just now rounding back into form. So we'll call that an incomplete, but the reason I mention it, getting to Akeem Hicks a couple of months ago early looks pretty darn good, too, since he's playing like a defensive MVP candidate, doesn't it?
Yeah, but Arthur, I got to backtrack on that. You can't fault the Kyle Long deal.
I don't think I did. I was just kind of pointing out his record right now. We'll call that an incomplete.
You can't even say it doesn't look like such a good move. I mean, the injury is the injury. And Bears fans don't realize how gruesome that injury was.
I guess more than calling it not a good move, I'm just pointing out what can go right and go wrong with getting to these guys early. I'm not saying it was a bad decision at all, and Kyle may be the most important guy in that locker room keeping this thing together, if not, he's up near the top of the list. So, you know, face of the franchise type, I get it. I'm just saying there are risks and rewards when you try and get to a guy early.
Yeah, no question that there is a real risk factor involved. So I think with the 5 or 10 minutes we have left, Arthur, the most interesting topic should be what's next? You know, I mean, where is this team realistically at, and what do you do with them? And this perception, I understand, they're 3-4. You've got the Vikings at 5-2, and that's who you're chasing. You probably could say we should have beat the Vikings in Soldier Field. You get another crack at them. And so all of a sudden, you know, all the people who wanted, you know, Pace and Fox ridden out of town on rail are talking about this team being playoff contenders. They're not.
Somewhere in between, contenders. Right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that Baltimore team is a bad football team right now. Mm-hmm. Carolina is a good football team with a quarterback they can't trust. And in fairness to Newton, one of those interceptions is not his fault. Prince Amukamara made a really nice play deflecting that football. And then
and Ron Rivera said the fumble wasn't his fault either. Curtis Samuel needs to hold on to it, so for what it's worth.
Yeah, Ron Rivera is one of my best friends in the business. I don't agree with him on that. That's too long a pitch on that play. You don't run that play in the NFL. You might get away with it in college.
You throw it to a rookie who's kind of new in his
position. You're throwing like a 7-yard pitch to a kid who's not ready for it. But again, listen, if not for those plays, you're still 3-3 playing in overtime. I mean, that's the bottom line. So, you know, to suddenly make the leap and say, oh, these guys are playoff contenders, what you have is, you know, if we've born and bred Bears fans and grown up in the city of Chicago, it all starts with the defense. You love the defense. And what is happening, which many of us predicted, is that this defense is beginning to emerge as potentially one of the better groups in the NFL.
Yeah.
But as long as you still have no receivers, as long as you have an offensive line that's playing on duct tape and courage, because, you know, I mean, Kyle Long shouldn't be out there. He's doing the best he can. Josh Sitton, who's played pretty close to a Pro Bowl level, struggled in the second half against Carolina. Young Brian Cox blew him up a couple times on some third down plays, and I haven't seen that happen to Sitton at all. And he looked to me to be uncomfortable. Now, I don't know if there's an injury we're not hearing about there or what it is, but the offensive line, and then all along I've worried that the weak link is Charles Leno, and it continues to be the weak link. Cody Whitehair seemed to stabilize a little bit last week. He didn't, you know, muff any shotgun snaps, but he's not playing at the level he did last year. And then you get to the receiver problem. to suggest that this team could go up against another playoff team and contend. I don't see that happening, but we are going to find out on Sunday, because right now the New Orleans Saints are the hottest team in the NFL with four straight wins, and they suddenly are playing defense under Dennis Allen. They're running the football much better with Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara, and then you got Drew Brees, who is just waiting till they cast the bronze for Canton.
Yeah, I think what we're seeing is, and don't at me, listeners, is John Fox is probably doing enough to, if things continue trending this way. I think Bears fans pining for their new young hot head coach in 2018 are probably going to be disappointed, because Fox has this team rallied and playing well defensively. But more to the point of what you said, yeah. So now they're 1-3 in the conference. They're 0-2 in the division, and I'm a big believer in the Vikings. So no, I don't think the Bears are catching the Vikings. But they're building confidence, they're building morale, and they're showing that maybe they're really going to be able to get this thing going in 2018. I'm not writing off the second half. I'm just trying to point out what a tall hill there is to climb. And then we get to New Orleans and how the Saints are doing what they're doing, four wins in a row on top of the NFC South. And Breeze is kind of Breeze, but he has four picks in the past 2 weeks. I don't think we've necessarily seen his best yet. Michael Thomas hasn't went off yet. So that's what's so impressive about what the Saints are doing, is they've discovered complementary football with the run game and the defense.
Well, one of the really interesting thing to watch on Sunday is that the Saints offensive line is really banged up.
Yep. And Larry Warford out.
And everything the Bears are doing right now is spinning around that front. Akiem Hicks is playing again at a Pro Bowl level. Eddie Goldman is too, whether people realize it or not. The nose tackle is the toughest position to evaluate unless you're willing to study the tape, and I do a little bit of that, and I'm telling you, Eddie Goldman is developing into the monster we thought he could be.
Even Jonathan Bullard starting to flash a little.
Jonathan Bullard flashed. Yep. Roy Robertson-Harris, unfortunately, looked like another injury last week that could cost him some significant time, but he was an occasional play waiting to happen, and Mitch Unrein's another guy who's doing dirty work out there, so these guys are playing really, really well. And then Danny Trevathan, behind them. I mean, he's the linchpin of this whole thing right now. Leonard Floyd is really interesting, because maybe he's not going to be what we thought he was going to be, which is your double-digit Von Miller, Vic Beasley Jr. type sack guy. But he's playing a complete game at linebacker better than those two guys have ever done. And he is occasionally getting to the quarterback. So the point is, I don't see them beating the Saints on Sunday in New Orleans, but I think what would be a huge step forward, the evolution of this team, is to go out and make it tough, to go out and keep the game close, for the defense to force New Orleans to struggle, to force Drew Brees to beat them. And I do think maybe they're capable of that. And if that happens, they'll take another step forward going into the bye.
We've talked a lot of Leonard Floyd the past 2 weeks. I don't want to get bogged down in it. I agree with you. He's playing a complete football game. I don't think that he's quite Von Miller yet, who is covering wheel routes out of the backfield and shutting down the run. Maybe Vic Beasley, who's a one-trick pony, not Von Miller.
He's not Vic Beasley yet either. I wasn't suggesting that he's caught up to them. I was just going for the style comparison.
But Miller's a lot more than just a guy who burns it off the edge. I think you hit, though, on the matchup of this game. Follow the money under Mickey Loomis and Sean Payton and Drew Brees, and the undersized Brees needs his protection from the inside out. You just mentioned Larry Warford's going to be down. I don't remember how to pronounce the guy's name who's going to start ahead of him. Cometti, Sergio Cometti, something like that. But you just said the Bears' strength right now is up the middle in pushing the pocket, and that's what makes Drew Brees uncomfortable. That's why he always needs to be tippy-toed in the pocket. So if we're looking for an upset, I think we just identified what needs to happen for it to occur.
Well, and the other thing that's going to happen, Arthur, is New Orleans' defense is getting better, but it's not great.
Right.
And
Aaron Jones went off in the first half against them last week, the Packers' rookie running back.
The big mistake that I thought Dow Loggins made last week is they were coming off a 36-carry, 100-and-whatever-it-was-yard performance by Jordan Howard, 240 yards on the ground, and they had found a way to set up the play action without even forcing Mitchell Trubisky to make some plays down the field. And the fact that the Bears didn't come out in the first half against Carolina, who had 8, 9, 10 in the box almost all day long, and run play action more than they did, at least to see if they could make it work and open some things up, was a big mistake. And so now I think New Orleans comes in with a 50-50 chance of dealing with it. But if the Bears can establish themselves with Jordan Howard in the first quarter and then go to play action, Drew Brees is going to score some points on this defense. And so, you know, for all these Bears fans pining to see more of Trubisky throwing the football, if they get behind 7 or 10 points in the first half, they're going to, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to be the second most interesting thing to watch in this game. Number one will be what the defense can do against an elite offense. And then number two will be, assuming that they make a few, not even make a few mistakes, assuming they get beat a few times, when they have to let Trubisky go a little bit, what's he going to do? And right. So I think you are going to see Mitch Trubisky throw the ball at least 25, maybe 30 times this week. And that, you know, you have to hope that that doesn't turn out to be a bad thing.
Hub Dot, we only have a couple minutes left here on the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast, and we hope that you are subscribed to us. If you haven't done so, please do it on iTunes. He's Hub Arkish, at Hub Arkish on Twitter. I'm Arthur Arkish, at Arthur Arkish. Dan Mott, our producer behind us, making us sound so nice. And thank you once again to Loot Crate, the best surprise you know is coming. I know we only have a couple minutes left, Hub, but you just said something that kind of piqued my curiosity. Do you think John Fox Dowell Loggins told us last week he's a quarterback guy. We all know that he loves to run the football. Do you think Foxy, with the role they're on right now, watching Jordan Howard 2 weeks ago, pulled Dowell aside at some point last week and said, this is what we're doing. I'm the coach who's now won 3 games, the only 3 games in NFL history this way. And until further notice, that's the way it's going to go?
No. Dowell actually talked about that on Wednesday and confirmed that Foxy likes doing this. But he also made clear that's not a marching orders or game plan going in, that each game evolves differently and that, you know, you have to see how things are working. And what did happen was they had a conversation on the sideline that was mutual once they got the second defensive touchdown and said, okay, we're playing on the lead here. Let's be smart about this. And so that's why I keep referring to, you have to assume Breeze is going to make a few things happen in the first half, and we'll see where it goes from there.
Okay. We're about out of time here. We are going to make some predictions. And other than that, just keep an eye on Michael Thomas. Showed up on the injury report with the knee injury. That could be big. Clearly, New Orleans is number one receiver. They haven't fully unleashed him yet in his second season. We mentioned Larry Warford is going to be out at right guard for the Saints. On the Bears side, you mentioned some guys are banged up, but on the Wednesday injury report, did anyone jump out at you? I believe it was a maintenance day for Kyle Long. Is there any other ailments that Bears fans should be aware of there?
They took a beating on Sunday in Carolina. It was a very physical football game, but nothing new that would impede the development that we're seeing. And again, we tape midweek, and so, you know, we have to hope that a couple of these guys get healthy. I'm curious as to why Nick Kwiatkowski continues to practice and not play at all. That said, one more guy I got to mention before we go. Christian Jones also had a hell of a football game last Sunday, and we've always known about his athleticism, so he's another young man to keep a close eye on development.
It looks like the instincts are catching up a little bit to his urgency. He's triggering in the hole. He is playing physical, but also looks like he's getting into the right space a little bit more often, and that's, of course, a good problem to have because we know the Bears are excited about Kwiatkowski once they can get him back in the fold, fully healthy as well.
Yeah, the idea of this defense getting deeper is obviously an exciting prospect. Yeah. The question is, will it be deep enough to deal with New Orleans? And it is pick time, Arthur. I'll go first because, last week I said there's no way I can pick the Bears against a more talented team like Carolina. We saw what happened. But it happened because Carolina's quarterback, in essence, made enough mistakes to allow them to win the football game. Drew Brees isn't going to do that. I mean, he may throw a pick or two. That wouldn't be shocking. But he also is going to come back and make up for it. This running game of New Orleans is impressive. Watch the tape, folks. They're really getting physical down there. Now, Warford is a big loss. And their defense, I think, is suspect. But the Bears' offense isn't good enough yet to take advantage of it. Plus, you got that huge home field advantage in the dome. So I'm afraid this one gets away. But I expect the Bears to make it hard on the Saints. I think that they're going to give them a ball game. And in the end, I think it's probably New Orleans, something like 24-16.
47.5 point total. New Orleans are 9-point home favorite. So I'm going to say that the Bears will cover that spread. I'm just not quite ready to pick them yet. Not in this spot for many of the reasons Hub just laid out. Maybe none more so than just going into the Superdome and seeing Drew Brees and maybe this being the first game that really rests on the right shoulder of Mitch Trubisky by the time it's over. I love what I've seen for Trubisky. I'm not sure he's quite ready for this challenge yet. I don't know about a score, but I think the Bears cover. I think they do lose. And then, I don't know. I know I have to pick them at some some point. Maybe it'll be after the bye when Brett Hundley and the Packers come into town. I guess you'll have to come back and continue listening to the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast to find out.
That will do it for this edition, however, folks. Remember to go to iTunes to download and subscribe and check out our great sponsor, Loot Crate. I'm guessing you go to lootcrate.com.
That's right.
The best surprise you know is coming. Thanks for joining us, and we look forward to visiting with you again next week here on Pro Football Weekly Chicago.